Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in the second half of Jeremiah 51, verses 33 through 64, which I will call The Utter Destruction of Babylon, Part B. Now, let me give you the titles of my last five audios for Jeremiah. This is the next to the last one. Tomorrow will be the last one. Jeremiah 50, first half of the chapter, Judgment on Babylon, Part A. Jeremiah 50, Part B, Judgment on Babylon, Part B. Jeremiah 51, Part A, The Utter Destruction of Babylon, Part A. Jeremiah 51, Part B, The Utter Destruction of Babylon, Part B. And the last chapter of Jeremiah I will entitle The Fall of Jerusalem Recounted. So you see, the last five chapters of Jeremiah are all about the destruction of Babylon and also the destruction that Babylon caused when Babylon destroyed Israel in 586 B.C., destroyed Judah. So we start now in Jeremiah 51, 33 through 36. This is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says. The daughter of Babylon is like a threshing floor at the time it is trampled. In other words, Babylon will be stomped on, even as the Jews stomped on the wheat to separate the chaff from the grain. The time to harvest her will soon come, says God. That metaphor is obvious. She's going to be reaped like wheat. Verse 34, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, has devoured us. He has thrown us into confusion. He has made us an empty jar. That ultimately happened in 586. He also came in 598 also, as well as 605. So Nebuchadnezzar has been a thorn in the side of Judah, the remnant of Israel, for a long time. Like a serpent, he has swallowed us and filled his stomach with our delicacies and then has spewed us out. May the violence done to our flesh be upon Babylon, say the inhabitants of Zion. The inhabitants of Zion, of course, are the Jerusalemites. Zion is that hill in Jerusalem, which is a metonymy, a part for the whole, a symbolic part of the whole of Jerusalem. And, of course, Jerusalem is the capital of Judah. A little bit of imprecation here. May our blood be on those who live in Babylonia, says Jerusalem. Well, that's perfectly justified. Babylon came in and wiped them out. Now, but you might say, but God told the Babylonians to come wipe the Jews out. Well, that's true. The Jews needed some chastisement, but Babylon's still guilty. That's not a contradiction. Babylon was just as idolatrous as the Jews were. Verse 36, therefore, this is what the Lord says. See, I will defend your cause and avenge you. I will dry up her sea, Babylon's sea, and make her springs dry. Now, that might be a reference to how Cyrus the Persian in 539, Cyrus the Great, how he, or at least his army, he wasn't there personally, how his army took Babylon. His soldiers drained the Euphrates River, dammed up the river, and then marched up the shallow riverbed and went up to the gates of Babylon while Belshazzar, the regent of the city, was feasting at Belshazzar's feast at nighttime, and they sneaked in and took over the city. Now, that drying up of the Euphrates might be what God is referring to here in verse 36. I will dry up her sea and make her springs dry. Could be. Or it could just be a metaphor talking about if you don't have water, you're not prosperous anymore. You're under judgment. No sea, no fish, no springs. Well, you can't wash your dishes, you can't drink, you can't live. Jeremiah 51, verses 37 through 40. God continues, Babylon will be a heap of ruins, a haunt of jackals, an object of horror and scorn, a place where no one lives. Her people all roar like young lions, they growl like lion cubs. But while they are aroused, I will set out a feast for them and make them drunk, so that they shout with laughter, then sleep forever and not awake, declares the Lord. I will bring them down like lambs to the slaughter, like rams and goats. So Babylon is a haunt of jackals. That's been referred to before by Jeremiah in Jeremiah 50, verse 39, Holman Christian Study Bible Translation. Therefore, desert creatures will live with hyenas, and ostriches will also live in her. It, referring to Babylon, will never again be inhabited or lived in through all generations. Jeremiah 51, 26, that's in this chapter. No one will be able to retrieve a cornerstone or a foundation stone from you, because you will become desolate forever. This is the Lord's declaration. Now, I pointed out in the last audio that Cyrus didn't really devastate Babylon. He just took it over and incorporated it into his kingdom. However, in 520 or so, a new king of Persia, Darius I, when he looked at his province of Babylon, because Babylon had been incorporated into the Persian Empire by Cyrus and made a province, when Darius looked at his province, it was rebelling, and so he went down to Babylon and made a big siege of it. Took them over a year with an incredible stratagem. Very interesting story told by Herodotus. I'm not going to go into it now. But at any rate, Darius comes in and wipes out the place, tears down the walls, burns the city down, and so forth. And as time goes on, Babylon ends up being a heap of ruins, a haunt of jackals, which it is today. An object of horror and scorn, a place where no one lives. You need to look at the picture on Wikipedia and see what Babylon looks like today. Jeremiah's prophecy was fulfilled. Now, the Home of Christian Study Bible has, in verse 39, desert creatures will live with hyenas. I think that's the same word that the NIV translates as jackals. Some kind of animal, they don't know for sure. Young's Literal Translation, as well as the King James, has dragons. Babylon will be a haunt of dragons. I don't think so. Now in verse 38, Babylon's people all roar like young lions. Well, what does that mean? Well, it could be the drunken revelry at the feasting that was going on at Belshazzar's feast before Cyrus conquered the city. Or it could be there was a roar going on because of the high spirits and rage at Cyrus as the Babylonians prepared to fight Cyrus. I'm not really sure, but they're roaring. Won't do any good because they're going to get killed. Verse 39, but while they are aroused, I will set out a feast for them and make them drunk so that they shout with laughter. Now, that does sound like Belshazzar's feast as described in Daniel. They will shout with laughter, then sleep forever and not awake. The laughter doesn't last. Verse 40, I will bring them down like lambs to the slaughter, like rams and goats. Now, this reference to a feast in verse 39, I will set out a feast for them. John Gill assumes that's Belshazzar's feast, as I do too. And Gill quotes the famous Greek historians Herodotus and Xenophon, that the city of Babylon was taken, say those two, while the inhabitants were feasting. And that account also agrees with Daniel 5, 1 and 30, which we'll get to when we get there in our podcast. So this is a famous story, Belshazzar's feast. You remember the handwriting was on the wall, many, many tuckles apart, a parson. But go now to Jeremiah 51, verses 41 through 44. How Shishak will be captured. Shishak is a cryptogram for Babylon, kind of like a code word. That word's come up before in a previous verse in Jeremiah. I don't have the site in front of me, but this is not controversial. It means Babylon. How Shishak will be captured, the boast of the whole earth seized. What a horror Babylon will be among the nations. She was the boast of the whole earth because she was a mighty empire. And the whole earth, of course, would be the ancient Near East, not the whole planet. They didn't know about China and the United States of Sodom and Gomorrah. The sea will rise over Babylon. Its roaring waves will cover her. Now that's metaphorical, of course. There's no ocean anywhere near Babylon. You get wiped out by the sea. That's a pretty terrible way to die. Verse 43, her towns will be desolate. Notice it's not only the city of Babylon that's going to go down, but the towns of the Babylonian Empire will also be desolate. A dry and desert land, a land where no one lives, through which no man travels. And of course, all this eventually happened in the history of Babylon, which I'm not going to go through again. Basically, what happened is the Seleucid emperor, Nicanor, he built a city, Seleucia, about 50 or 60 miles to the north on the Tigris River, and that became the capital, and he carried a bunch of wealth out of Babylon. And then the Parthians, who ruled from roughly 3rd century BC to 3rd century AD, they created a city called Ctesiphon, which is real close to Seleucia, if not right on top of it. I'm not really sure, but again, it was just north of Babylon, and again, all the valuables taken out of Babylon, and pretty soon Babylon just died. I think the walls that stopped the canals from running into the earth surrounding the canals got broken down at some point, and the whole area turned into a marsh. Nothing living there but a bunch of mosquitoes. No jackals. Well, they had some jackals, but no people. Verse 44, God says, I will punish Bel in Babylon. Who is Bel? Well, that's the original god of Babylon, the chief god. Bel was originally called Marduk, according to the Encyclopedia Britannica. And eventually, Marduk was simply called Bel. Bel, translated from the Babylonian language, means Lord, according to the Encyclopedia Britannica. So Bel or Marduk, he goes by two different names. Not only was he the chief god of the whole empire of Babylonia, he was the chief god of the city of Babylon, and a lot of good he did. We go now to Jeremiah 51, verses 45 through 48. Come out of her, my people. God is still speaking to the Israelites. Come out of her, my people. Run for your lives. Run from the fierce anger of the Lord. Do not lose heart or be afraid when rumors are heard in the land. One rumor comes this year, another the next, rumors of violence in the land and of ruler against ruler. Well, in verse 45, when God tells the Israelites to come out of Hur, he's referring to the time of Cyrus's famous decree, which is around 538, the year or so after he conquered Babylon. Cyrus says, okay, Israelites, you can go back to Israel now, rebuild your temple and rebuild your city. And so God is saying, well, come out. Do exactly what he says. Get out. Run for your lives. Run from the fierce anger of the Lord. You stay in Babylon, things won't be good there because Babylon's eventually going down, as it did in 520 under Darius I. This is what Matthew Poole says of these words, come out of her, my people. These words are an exhortation to the Jews to be willing, upon the first proclamation of liberty by Cyrus, to go out of Babylon, notwithstanding the pleasantness of the place, and that now their stakes had been pitched there many years because of the ruin which most certainly come on that place. So Poole is referring to the fact that many Jews were well settled in Babylon. It was hard to get them to come out. And so God says, come out, come out, come out. This expression is reminiscent of Revelation 18:4, which says, then I heard another voice from heaven, come out of her, my people, so that you will not share in her sins or receive any of her plagues. Well, this is a direct quote from Jeremiah. John the Apostle, or the angel speaking in the Revelation to John, is referring to Babylon the Great. If you look at the chapter, the heading says, the fall of Babylon. And I believe that that Babylon the Great there, the whore that sits on the back of the beast, the red beast, that whore is referring to apostate Israel, the same Israel that killed Jesus and persecuted the apostles. Ironically, God has told the old Israel to come out of Babylon, and now he's telling the church to come out of the old Israel. I'm speaking from an Orthodox preterist view of Revelation. Now in verse 46, the people in captivity in Babylon, the Jews, they're told not to lose heart or to be afraid when rumors are heard of the land. Rumors of violence, rumors of rulers fighting rulers. That would be rumors of war in preparation for war with Cyrus, who's coming, and the Babylonians knew he was coming. Don't let that bother you. Of course, the captives in Babylon did not realize that Cyrus was eventually going to set them free. They had no idea. They thought they would be wiped out along with the Babylonians when Cyrus came. Verse 47, for the time will surely come when I will punish the idols of Babylon. Her whole land will be disgraced, and her slain will all lie fallen within her. Now, that could have happened during the time of Cyrus because the armies of Babylon did suffer some defeat from the armies of Cyrus. But again, I run the events of Cyrus and Darius together. You put those two events together, Babylon not only falls, but Babylon is disgraced and destroyed. Verse 48, then heaven and earth and all that is in them will shout for joy over Babylon, rejoicing at Babylon's fall. We can rest assured that John the Apostle, when he wrote Revelation 18:20, had Jeremiah's verse here in mind. In Revelation 18:20, we read, rejoice over her, referring to the whore of Babylon. Rejoice over her, heaven, and you saints, apostles, and prophets, because God has executed your judgment on her. The whore of Babylon going down. The book of Revelation has more Old Testament references and allusions than any other book in the Bible. You can't really understand the book of Revelation until you understand the Old Testament. But of course, when people become new Christians, what's the first book they want to read? I've seen this over and over again. They got to understand Revelation. Well, folks, it ain't that easy. You got to start with the Old Testament. In verse 48, we see that everybody, heaven and earth, that's everybody in the sky, every bird that flies and every land that walks on the soil, everything will shout for joy over Babylon, for out of the north destroyers will attack her. That's because the Persians are going to be coming from the north, because they come from Media across the Tigris River down to Babylon, which is further south on the Euphrates River. We go now to Jeremiah 51, verses 49 through 53. Babylon must fall because of Israel's slain, just as the slain in all the earth have fallen because of Babylon. In other words, Babylon is going to be judged, even though God told them to go in and take the city. They're still going to be judged for it. God can sovereignly orchestrate events on earth, but we are still responsible for our actions because we are all free to sin. Babylon must fall because of Israel's slain, just as the slain in all the earth have fallen because of Babylon. In other words, Babylon had wiped out a bunch of people all over the ancient Near East. All the earth means the ancient Near East. Verse 50, you who have escaped the sword, leave and do not linger. That could refer to Jews who escaped Babylon in 586. A few of them were left behind. If you recall, Jeremiah was one of them. But those escapees never made it to Babylon. So probably what Jeremiah is referring to here, what Yahweh is referring to here, is all of you who were carried captive to Babylon but managed to escape your captivity, either on the way or after you got there. Or it could be you guys have escaped the sword because of Cyrus's victory in 539, and now he's saying you've escaped. The Persians didn't kill you when they took Babylon. The Babylonians haven't killed you, so get out of Babylon. Leave, do not linger. When Cyrus presents his decree to you, take it and go. Remember the Lord in a distant land and think on Jerusalem. We are disgraced, for we have been insulted, and shame covers our faces because foreigners have entered the holy places of the Lord's house. Well, that's true. The Babylonians not only entered the holy temple of God in Jerusalem, they burned it to the ground. But days are coming, verse 52, declares the Lord, when I will punish her idols, and throughout her land the wounded will groan. Even if Babylon reaches the sky and fortifies her lofty stronghold, I will send destroyers against her, declares the Lord. And of course, the destroyers are the armies of Cyrus and all of his mercenary subordinate kingdoms in that army. Even if Babylon reaches the sky, it won't do any good. What does that mean? The walls of Babylon were very high. Herodotus says the walls were 200 cubits high. Cubits a foot and a half, so you're talking about 300 feet high. Doesn't matter. Babylon's going down. We read in Jeremiah 51, 54 through 57 the following. Yahweh continues, the sound of a cry comes from Babylon, the sound of great destruction from the land of the Babylonians. The Lord will destroy Babylon. He will silence her noisy den. Now that noisy den could be just the typical noises that one hears in a city, but it could refer to reveling feasters, such as those who were at Belshazzar's feast, or it could be those who shout in victory, hey, you can't get us, Persians, our walls are holding you back, hip hip hooray, and then oops, the Persians got in using the Euphrates River and they got through the gates, and so we're going to be quiet now. God will silence Babylon's noisy den. Ways of enemies will rage like great waters, Yahweh continues. The roar of their voices will resound. A destroyer will come against Babylon. That's Persia. That's Cyrus the Great. Her warriors will be captured. Babylon's warriors will be captured. And their bows will be broken. For the Lord is a God of retribution. He will repay in full. If you don't believe that God is a God of justice, then you have not read the Bible and you do not care what the Bible says. God is a God of retribution. He's a God of love, yes, nobody's denying that, but he's also a God of wrath, and there are too many people that are presuming upon God's mercy when they say, oh, I'm a good person, I'll go to heaven, I don't need to believe in Jesus. You're going to be in for a rude awakening when you shuffle off your mortal coil and you step into the world beyond, into a spiritual realm which you have not really given too much thought about, and you will realize, oh my gosh, I am in a world of trouble. Because my sins, they did matter, and there is a just God who's going to punish them, and I don't have anybody to represent me in the heavenly assize. Verse 57, God says, I will make her, Babylon's officials and wise men, drunk. When you get drunk, you can't think. When you get drunk, you stagger. When you get drunk, you make a fool out of yourself. So Babylon's wise men, and Babylon was famous for wisdom, if you will recall, doesn't matter, they're going to be drunk and stupid. Her governors, officers, and warriors as well. And that drunkenness might have occurred at Belshazzar's feast, perhaps an allusion to that. But these officers will sleep forever and not awake, declares the king. That's the king whose name is the Lord Almighty. We go now to Jeremiah 51, verses 58 through 64, and we will finish this audio and this chapter 51 of Jeremiah. This is what the Lord Almighty says. Babylon's thick wall will be leveled. Now, this is a grandiloquent introduction. The Lord Almighty says. Remember, this prophecy has all been written down for a gentleman named Sarai. I forgot to mention that. We'll see that in just a minute. And he has carried this to the Babylonian captives. And the prophecy is all about the destruction of Babylon. And I'm sure the captives are saying, what are you talking about? This city's not going anywhere. There's no way it's going to fall. Look at those thick walls. But this is what the Lord Almighty says. Babylon's thick wall will be leveled. Now, Gill has some comments on that. He said the wall was 32 feet broad and that carriages might pass by each other without any danger. Gill quotes an earlier commentator named Curtius. Gill quotes Herodotus, who says that the wall was 50 royal cubits broad. That's what, 75 feet? That's a lot broader than 32 feet, probably because people don't know exactly. The ancient Greek geographer and historian Strabo, and Diodorus Siculus, another famous ancient historian, say that two chariots drawn with four horses abreast might meet each other and pass easily, eight horses wide, and pass easily on top of that wall. Theseus, another ancient writer, says the breadth of the wall was large enough for six chariots. Well, I don't know exactly how wide the wall was, but it was obviously pretty wide, but it's going to be leveled. Remember, Darius did that in 520 or so. And her high gates set on fire, the peoples exhaust themselves for nothing, the nation's labor is only fuel for the flames. In other words, you work, you work, you work, and you know there was slave labor going on building those thick walls, and all they're doing is piling up kindling for a big fire. Verse 59, this is the message Jeremiah gave to the staff officer Seraiah, son of Neriah, the son of Maaseiah, when he went to Babylon with Zedekiah. Zedekiah ruled from 597 to 586 when he was taken off into exile with the other captives after being blinded. When Seraiah went to Babylon with Zedekiah, king of Judah, in the fourth year of his reign. Now, apparently, Zedekiah had gone to Babylon in the fourth year of his reign. He didn't go into captivity until the 11th year of his reign. The fourth year of his reign would be about 593. He started ruling in 597. So, apparently, Zedekiah was going to Babylon to talk to his master Nebuchadnezzar, and Seraiah went along with him, and Jeremiah gave a message to Seraiah to take to the captives. Now, Seraiah is only mentioned here. We don't know anything else about him. The NIV does not add at the end of the verse what other translations do. The other translations say that Seraiah was chamberlain or quartermaster. The King James says he was a quiet prince. Well, whoever he was, he takes this prophecy against Babylon written down on a scroll and he takes it to the captives in Babylon. This is right around 594 or so. This was 7 or 8 years before the final destruction of Jerusalem in 586. It was about 55 years before the taking of Babylon by the Persians. So the captives had to wait over half a century before they saw the prophecy fulfilled. That's a long time. The wheels of God's justice grind slowly, but they do grind. Now, this prophecy was written by Jeremiah himself. It says so in verse 60. Jeremiah had written on a scroll. Baruch is not mentioned. Baruch must not have been with Jeremiah at the time. Now, all these disasters that are coming on Babylon are written on the scroll, and then Jeremiah says to Seraiah, when you get to Babylon, see that you read all these words aloud. But Jeremiah doesn't say who the words are supposed to be read aloud to. Here's some suggested options. One, he was supposed to read the scroll in the presence of the captive Jews, and that's the way I just assumed it to be, and I think that's exactly who he was supposed to read it to. Other people have suggested that Seraiah was supposed to read the scroll in the presence of Babylonian rulers. I don't think so. If he did that, the Babylonians would have been highly incensed. Oh, here's a nice prophecy about our empire going to be wiped out. There's nobody going to be living here but jackals, not a stone, to build a house. And would these rulers of Babylon have been so nice to Jeremiah? Remember, they gave Jeremiah 7 or 8 years later when Jerusalem fell in 586. They gave Jeremiah the choice of either coming to Babylon or staying in Jerusalem. They didn't kill him, because Jeremiah had been preaching so much doom and gloom against Judah, Babylon's enemies. Why would Jeremiah mess that up by asking Seraiah to read this horrible prophecy against Babylon to the Babylonian rulers? I just don't believe that. Here's another option suggested by the great John Calvin. He said that Seraiah was supposed to read this, but not to the public. He's supposed to read it privately, not to the Jews. He wouldn't read it to the Babylonians, for the Babylonians would not have understood Hebrew. Well, but they could have had translators. Well, and he wouldn't have read it to the Babylonians anyway, because it would have been highly impolitic, as I've said. But Calvin says that when you read this verse 62, then say, after you've read all the words aloud, then say, O Lord, you have said you will destroy this place. So Seraiah is speaking to God, so therefore he's speaking to God privately with no people around. I think Calvin must have been smoking something when he said that. I don't believe that. It says in verse 61, when you have read all these words aloud, that of course the purpose was to give the captives hope. And besides, what good does it do to read it privately when the prophecy says, come out of Babylon, come out? No, it was read to the Jews. So Jeremiah tells Seraiah to summarize the prophecy by saying this in verse 62, say to the people's not in there, but I'm assuming that, Then say, O Lord, you have said you will destroy this place so that neither man nor animal will live in it. It will be desolate forever. That's the summary. Destruction of Babylon. Then in verse 63, when you finish reading the scroll, Sariah, tie a stone to it and throw it into the Euphrates. Why? Well, when you throw a stone into the water, that stone will sink. That's a good symbol of the sinking of Babylon. Verse 64 explains that. Then say, so will Babylon sink to rise no more because of the disaster I will bring upon her. That stone's not going to float. And her people will fall. The words of Jeremiah end here. Now, this idea of a stone sinking and falling, never to rise again, is referred to once again in Revelation. Revelation 18:21, talking about Babylon the whore, which I, in my humble Orthodox preterist opinion, thinks refers to the apostate nation of Israel, which was destroyed in AD 70, which killed Jesus in AD 30, and which persecuted the prophets and the apostles and the Christians all the way up between AD 30 and AD 70. That apostate Israel was the whore of Babylon. We read in Revelation 18:21, then a mighty angel picked up a stone like a large millstone and threw it into the sea, saying, in this way, Babylon, the great city, will be thrown down violently and never be found again. That fits perfectly with what Jeremiah told Sariah to do. So, ladies and gentlemen, we are now finished with Jeremiah 51. We're now prepared to go to the last chapter in Jeremiah, chapter 52, which I will call The Fall of Jerusalem Recounted. I hope you stay tuned for that last chapter, and I hope you enjoyed the discussion of this one.